Chapter 51. The next 2 weeks passed in a blur, all blending together as that slaver ship jumped from one world to the next. They visited different colored suns, and with them more people imbued different types of magical powers. It had taken some getting used to, but Charlie was slowly coming around to accepting that this truly was some sort of magic, and that technology, at least in the traditional human sense, was not coming into play as he had formerly thought. The revelation was a bit of a mindfuck. He had also witnessed the Drukes doing their chanting thing a few more times when he was sent on an errand within the ship. Apparently, they all had the ability to power devices or actually make a vessel fly, but for all that strength, they couldn't break free of their own slender restraints. After so many worlds, he came to realize that most aliens in this galaxy were quite human in appearance. Sure, some had pointy ears or violet skin or golden hair, but aside from the truly alien bits, like Tuk-Tuk's eye stalks, they were pretty easy to think of as almost human after a while. The differing powers endowed by certain suns were widely varied, and it seemed that, despite his original skepticism, some of these power-wielding people were in fact able to charge devices with their magic. It was, actually, the principal means of operating almost every piece of equipment. Some devices were fairly common, and were actually more akin to multi-tools, where the weapons aspect was just one of many. They could control ships, open locks, even remotely guide smaller craft if adequately charged. The slops, however, were far more military in nature. They somewhat resembled something akin to large brass knuckles, though sliding over a bit more of the hand than their human counterpart. Then there was a much rarer weapon, the claith, looking like a more robust slap that extended to the back of the wearer's wrist, was something that was purely a tool of violence. Charlie hadn't seen one in use yet, but he had spotted one carried by a bodyguard of the wealthier traders they encountered as they passed from solar system to solar system. They had landed just outside yet another planet's commerce center. This time, a brown dwarf cast a rusty hue over the skies. It was a brutal world, and everything about it felt oppressive, from the light, to the heat, to the dusty refuse stench hanging in the air. "I hate this place," he grumbled, as he and Tuk-Tuk lumbered along under their heavy loads. "He's not pleasant, no," Tuk-Tuk agreed. There was a relatively thin crowd in the markets that day, so at least they had less careless foot traffic and wandering drunks to get in their way. Stopping suddenly while carrying a massive pack was quite trying on the knees and back. "Carrying shit around again. Oh, how far I've fallen," he laughed to himself, thinking back to his buccaneering life just a few short weeks ago. Nearby, sounds of a crowd cheering would occasionally rise over the constant din of the marketplace. Something was up, but Tuk-Tuk didn't seem to know what it was. "Excuse me," Charlie said to a turbaned man who happened to be walking the same direction as their porter team. "What is all the cheering about?" The man looked at the slave with distaste, but answered him nonetheless. "The festival of Yondar, celebrating the 12 victories over the Buran invaders." "So it's a party then?" "Of sorts. Some speeches from the mayor and regional patrons, then the good stuff. Many bouts lasting all week."
"Bouts?"
"Yes. Our arena is one of the largest outside the Buru amphitheater on Gilea. Many will fight this week. A spectacle worthy of the festival of Yondar." The man seemed taken by his own sales pitch and swerved in the direction of what Charlie now knew was the local arena.
"You hear that, Tuk?"
"I hear. It's season for fighting, then." "It sounds like gladiators," he was talking about.
"If that means slaves who fight each other for their owners, then yes, it is very much like that.
Wait until we reach Buur Markets on Gilea, Charlie. The arena there is very big sight to see." Charlie let out a grim laugh. "Gladiators and slaves. I'll say it again, how very Roman of them." "Less talking," the trio of slavers leading their group said as they casually negated Charlie's translation spell as they passed. "Sanavusk," one said, and suddenly all were speaking gibberish.
"Why the hell did they do that?" Charlie lamented. "Bastards, that was totally uncalled for."
The rest of the walk he was forced to hear all of the languages in their native tongues, and the sheer quantity of foreign sounds made his head spin.
Imagine being stuck here without a translator permanently, he mused. I wouldn't even be able to ask for water or where the bathroom is. He thought on it a moment. Well, I could, but I wouldn't have a clue what they were telling me. As he was shoved back into his cell, Sauer and Captain Tour stood nearby, watching curiously. They spoke their incomprehensible language to one another, and something in the way they were looking at him made Charlie very uncomfortable. Sauer called out some random sounds. Charlie just sat on his cot. Impeso uvusk, he barked, and Charlie felt a slight shift in his ears as the translator spell reactivated. I said come here, slave. By this point, Charlie had learned it was far better to go along with things and not rock the boat. The Tslaver could make things very uncomfortable if they wanted. Give me your hand, Sauer said. Ugh, what this time? Charlie extended his hand, and before he could pull back, the Tslaver had pulled a small knife and made a shallow cut on his forearm. Back in your cell, Sauer ordered, then walked away with his captain. What the hell? Charlie said, wrapping his arm with a scrap of cloth. Tuk-Tuk leaned in close, pretending to look at his arm. Them forget to cancel my translator spell. I hear it all, Charlie. Oh yeah? So what's their problem? Shh, no speak loud. Them listen, he said, pointing to the eavesdropping walls of their cell. I know, Charlie replied in a whisper. But what's going on, Tuk? Captain say he may sell you to fighting school for to make you gladiator. Deja fucking vu. But I don't want to fight. Not your choice, Charlie. Them say you heal fast. Make them more profit. So that's why he cut my arm? To test how fast I heal? Dick move. And what if I just pick the scab so it heals slower? That'll screw up their plan, he said defiantly. He's true. Would be bad for selling to be fighter. But Captain Tour, him say if you no good for fighting, maybe you be worth something as Zamaki food. Zamaki? He's big animal, many teeth. Charlie blanched at the thought of ending his days on the receiving end of a mouthful of fangs. You know, Tuk, maybe fighting would be better than being fed to a Zamaki, whatever that is. What the hell has my life become? He grumbled to himself, imagining some ginormous hairy beast having him for dinner, then settled into his bunk and drifted off into an uneasy sleep.